Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 91, recorded October 14th, 2010, Viral Touchscreens. Welcome to This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 91. Patrick Norton here with the... Well, Ryan, are you with us? We're having...
I am. I'm trying my best. I'm compelling the internet to work in whatever obscure location I am at today.
You're in Los Angeles with yet another round of meetings with AMD. Are you interviewing with them, dude?
No, I'm not. We're learning about new exciting GPU technology that I'm unfortunately am not allowed to talk about today, but we'll be able to talk about it on an upcoming episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. But, you know, this show would be a lot easier if I just stayed at home and used the reliable internet connection we have at the office.
or if there was an actual 4G modem that would spit more than, you know, 0.9 megabits per second up. We should point out, in case Ryan suddenly turns into a voice manifestation, perhaps with a charming picture posted on the TriCaster, it's because he's dealing with, what did you say, a whopping, like, talk about asynchronous, 12 megabits down, 250K up on the hardwired line in the building he's in right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to use my phone as a 4G. It's got 4G kind of in the LA area here, but it's like a giant concrete building. The old stock exchange in Los Angeles. Nothing gets in or out of here, apparently. So, a lot of history. It's interesting.
Oh, well. History is good. Oh, my goodness. Before we get into the serious news, I got a tweet I have to share with everybody. Chasing Rockets at Patrick Norton. Best Buy has 8-foot HDMI cables on sale for $69. Regular price, $99. Hurry, the sale ends this week. I'm sure this was meant in humor, sarcastic humor, because everybody knows 8-foot HDMI cables cost $3 from monoprice.com. If you want an American assembled cable, you go to Blue Jeans Cable. But please, unless you are desperate I can't even explain how desperate I want you to be before you spend $70, much less $99 on an HDMI cable. Just don't do it.
Just don't watch TV that day. If it takes 2 days or 3 days for that cable to come in from that shipping scenario from Monoprice or Blue Jeans, it's still worth it.
Yeah,
you'll be able to feed your family for those 3 days.
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, and I understand the it's the side sells that really make the deal for Best Buy. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Best Buy has been doing a much better job of matching online competitor prices in recent times. But please, no $100 HDMI cables. It's just not necessary. The $100 cable doesn't work any better than.
Nope. $100 cable does not work any better than the $3 cable. Ironically, after talking about how poor my internet connection is, we just lost Patrick. But that's all right. We will quickly jump in here and talk about probably one of the few interesting hardware news pieces that came out this week, and that was the release of a new graphics chip from NVIDIA, the GeForce GT430. And before you get really super excited about this part, you should know that it is definitely a budget graphics chip. You'll find these selling from anywhere for probably $65 to $85 as of today. They're already on sale. It's really meant for people that have, you know, Intel integrated graphics. They want to play, maybe Civ 5 came out and they just realized they can't really play that very well. They want to upgrade to something. They don't want to spend any money. Or a significant amount of money. This could also be for somebody that wants to build a home theater PC and wants something that's going to be low cost, low power, low heat, low noise, accordingly with all those types of things. And that's the type of user and market segment that the GT430 is really aimed at. It's based on the Fermi architecture, so it does have DX11 support. It's got, you know, the polymorph engine tessellation support that NVIDIA has built into all of their graphics chips. Now, it's noticeably smaller and slower than some of the Fermi parts we've seen before. This has 96 CUDA cores in it, whereas the high-end GTX 480 has 480 CUDA cores. So that kind of gives you an idea of where it is in the scale of performance and all that type of thing. Still an interesting card, though. Its main competition, besides the GeForce GT 220, which is also an NVIDIA part, are two AMD GPUs, the Radeon 5570 and the Radeon 5550. Now, both of those sell, all of these sell for about the same price mark. It's very complex. It's very confusing when we start to get into this specific pricing segment because you have so many different cards in a $10 to $20 spectrum one way or the other. It's really difficult to say that you're making a bad decision if you go with either one of them, but I mean, if you, the AMD Radeon cards perform better for gaming, and we're talking about modest gaming, you know, 1680 by 1050 medium quality settings, that type of thing, and it's within 5 or 10 frame rate, something like that. So okay, do we still have my audio there? Can you hear me, Patrick? I think I can't hear Patrick now either. We're going to have to make an edit point here. I can see you, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you, Patrick.
Good call.
Hello, hello, hello.
There you are.
There we go. I just lost
you. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
How's that? Wow. Apparently it's the day of the doomed Skype interview.
I can stand really far away.
No, apparently it's most of the problems are turning out to be on my end, not yours. So let's go back. Galaxy GT430, True HD, TTS HD audio, bit streaming. So that's going, are they working with HDMI ports or using a DVI to HDMI adapter?
So all the graphics cards will have a full-size HDMI port, nice. Dual-link DVI port, and a VGA port, because they're kind of aimed at that low-price market, and maybe there's a good chance that people in that market have, you know, low-cost monitors that still might only have VGA support, unfortunately, sure. But that's the case.
Well, you could also think of it as a way to enable people who spent, you know, $6,000 on a monitor before HDMI became common. Because we've had some people TVs recently too. Who are like, you know, I bought a gigantic expensive monitor and it's still good and I don't really want to pay for a new monitor. Help. How do I feed it? It's kind of a bummer if you only have a VGA input on your monitor. But
it's also good for TVs. A lot of just a couple of generational DLP TVs would have VGA input, which are really convenient for hooking up your computer to the TV without having to go through HDMI complications and that type of stuff if you don't want to. So, I mean, there are advantages to it. I mean, it's a compelling card. It's not significantly better than anything in the AMD market right now, which is a little bit kind of disappointing. Anytime you see something brand new, you just want it to be a full jump ahead of what the competition is. But they're really not there yet. And I mean, it's still a good card. Like I said earlier, it's you're not going to make a bad decision in this price market. It's all going to be pretty close. As long as you get the most current generation part, I would definitely say don't buy the GT 220 when you can get the GT 30 for the same price. That just makes sense.
Well, you had mentioned in the price bracket you would get more performance out of an AMD part, but really, how much gaming performance are you getting out of any sub-$100 graphics card?
Right, exactly. And that's the point, is you're not playing with maxed out settings. You're playing with medium settings or maybe just below medium quality settings, and, you know, maybe 720p resolution or 16 by 10 resolution, you know, those types of things. So I think you're going to get a good quality gaming experience whether or not you go with the GT 430, the 5550, or the 5570. Either way, it really just depends on what sales they might have, the retailer, e-tailer you're looking at that particular day. You know, if you have just any kind of political affiliation with one side or the other, you know, that will affect your decision, obviously, as well. So But you know, it's a good product. It's not an amazing product, but it's good if you're building a home theater and you want something that's, you know, going to do bit stream audio and all that kind of deal and be simple and to the point.
I mean, that actually has me kind of excited. The idea of you know, being able to point to somebody, say, you can spend less than $100. This is a solid graphics card. You know, they're guaranteeing that it's going to do DTS and bit stream. Because you know, for a while there, it was like everybody was like, my card can do HDMI out. But it can't do audio, so I'm going to have to buy a $300 Asus card. And it's like, my card can do HDMI out and still carry audio, but it won't do any of the really cool high-end stuff. So it's nice to see like a relatively cheap card coming together with that. Right. I sense an upgrade for my home theater PC coming soon.
There you go. There you go. So there was another interesting news bit that you threw in here that I hadn't seen. Apparently, we're all going to be sick because of touchscreens. Is that right?
Well, I would like to mock this article. It's the Sacramento Bee, which is the regional newspaper for Sacramento, California. It's the state capital. And the article is talk about going viral. Touchscreen devices can harbor flu germs. And you laugh, right? But, you know, how many people do you know have either touchscreen devices in their games, their phones, they share their iPads around in the family? I just got over a medium flu. I have a toddler who goes to daycare, which means he is a vector, whatever you call the point where all of the disease gathers and then comes straight to me.
That's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, but it's pretty interesting. There was a Stanford University doctoral student co-authored a study on the spread of viruses and basically says, look, you know, look, don't touch, or risk going viral yourself is the really terribly punny kind of quote on that one. But they did a study. British researchers did a study. It says mobile phones harbor 18 times more bacteria than a flush handle in a typical men's restroom. So your cell phone has more bacteria than the handle in the crapper. And then according to well, John Crapper invented the toilet. I just wanted to bring that up. According to Julian's study published online in July by the Journal of Applied Microbiology, the risks of transmitting pathogens from glass surfaces to a person's skin are relatively high. If you put a virus on a surface like an iPhone, about 30% of it will get on your fingertips. And, of course, then it can go to your eyes, to your mouth. You know, then of course, like the next quote is, of course, no one can be sure how many people have gotten sick from sharing touchscreen electronics, but the devices add to the growing list of what they call fomites, which was a word I could not remember earlier, which are basically items that are handled that can spread viruses: handrails, elevator buttons, computer keyboards, automatic teller machines can all spread disease. When I worked at the studio at Tech TV, by the second year we were running that place, because you ever been in a television studio, there's the big director's board where they're punching all the buttons, and of course there's the audio board, there's another machine for the graphics. What they found is that if one person got sick who was working the TD board, they would get all the other tech directors, the people who basically do all the important switching of all the cameras that actually make the show run live, would get sick because they would all pick up the virus from using the same keyboard. So the big bottles of Purell started showing up next to every workstation in the studio by like year two of Tech TV. So it's something to think about. Wash your hands. Be, you know, if somebody's sniffling and snorfling, don't use their iPhone. Don't use their iPad.
Don't let anybody else touch your phone is what I would say.
Yeah. You know, I'm considering like getting these scary, you know, alcoholic wipes of doom and wiping my iPad after my son's used it. So don't tell him I said that, though. He'll be very confused.
Be disappointed.
It hurts. So should we get to the serious stuff now that we've touched on flu and disease and microbial spread?
I don't know. That sounds pretty serious to me, Patrick.
Touch screens of doom. Microbial.
Clean off my phone here.
Twitch 91. Microbial spread. That'll fly off the RSS feed. Sam wants to know about some new Radeon cards that are coming out soon. He says, I'm looking to upgrade an old ATI Radeon HD 4650 to something newer and hopefully, more capable. I'm thinking I should wait until the new 6000 series comes out so the prices will be lowered on the 5000 series cards, but I have some questions about what to do. I'm looking somewhere between $100 and $200 for a card, and I have a 500-watt power supply. The board supports PCI Express 2.0. I was wondering if I would be better off getting a lower-end 6000 series that would fit my price range, or if I would be better off getting a higher-end 5000 series card with a hopefully reduced price thanks to the release of the new 6000 series. You know, I think one of the great things about being a consumer of graphics cards is how easy every graphics vendor has always made it to decipher the most powerful card by a simple numbering system and a minimal amount of overlap between competing series.
Are you saying that tongue in cheek? I cannot stuff my tongue
any farther in my cheek. It's really sad, actually. I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts that the high-end 5,000 card may actually be faster on today's games than the low-end 6,000 card. Make me eat my words, Ryan.
No, I think you'll be correct there. Now, I can't talk a whole lot about the 6,000 series yet. There's a lot. I mean, go to PC Perspective. Go to any number of hardware websites out there today. There's a lot of information. Some of it might be true, some of it might not be true. It's one of those things, if you know there's an impending product release, to kind of wait a little bit, see what comes out, and see how it affects your decision or how it affects pricing on other things you might be interested in. You know, if and when the 6000 series comes out, there's two things that can happen. The 5000 series will drop in price, they'll sell out, and they'll move on. What I would say is more common today is that 5000 series stays at about the same price for a while, and it might sit in the market for another 2 months as people who have an existing 5000 series card get another one for Crossfire, or they're replacing something and they just want to get the same thing they had before, or they're buying one for a friend and they know they like this card, that type of thing. So I don't think that we'll have, like, you know, if the launch happens in 2 weeks of these 6000 series cards, I don't think that day you're going to see half price 5800 or half price 5700s. Sorry, the emergency services are coming to pick me up, I guess. He talks about wanting to spend between $100 and $200 for a card. The new stuff, when it comes out, they usually start with kind of the mid to high range parts. This is what happened with the 5000 series, at least. They start with the mid to high range parts, and then over the course of about 5 months, they released all the rest of the cards towards the bottom of the stack. So I would expect that same kind of cadence of release, where you have mid-range to high-end cards come out in October, November, and then over the next 4 or 5 months, we'll see a release into that. And I think you'll have to wait into that 4 to 5 month period before we get to the $100, $200 cards. Maybe we'll have some at that upper echelon, but definitely not near the $100 range. So if it's something where he knows he doesn't want to spend any more than $200, I don't think it's going to make a big difference if he buys today versus, you know, a month from now. But if he's thinking maybe two, and maybe he could be tempted to spend $225, you know, if you're that kind of consumer like I am, then maybe you want to wait. You just want to wait a little bit and see what happens. It's always touchy, right? This market has always been like that. And you know as well as I do, Patrick, that there's always something better coming around the corner. And if you are always waiting for it, you'll never buy anything new.
Yeah, well, you never buy anything new, but on the flip side, you will always be rewarded with more value for your dollar if you wait. But yes, if you keep waiting, you will end up never buying a new card and trying to figure out why everything looks like an Atari 2600.
Let's see. We got another email here from Rory about using different memory modules in a new system. He says, first of all, he loves the show. It's good news. Secondly, I'm upgrading my system, motherboard, CPU, and RAM to an AMD X6 1055T with one of the new 6-core Thuban processors. He's using an MSI 870A Fusion motherboard. That's one of the new chipset motherboards that supports the Lucid Hydra multi-GPU technology, which is kind of interesting. And he's going to buy 4 gigs of G-Skill 1600 megahertz RAM. He says he also has 2 gigs of other DDR3 RAM hanging around, but it's just 1066 or 1333 megahertz. He didn't remember. He was wondering if there would be any issues with the different RAM or if the parts will not function well together, and in which case, what would you recommend?
Well, won't they all... I mean, you can run faster. It's easier to run faster RAM at a slower speed. That's usually no problem. But yeah, I mean, with 4 gigabytes, I wouldn't take for, if you're actually going to run 4 gigabytes at 1600, I would not sully it with 2 gigabytes that's running at a considerably slower speed. You know, you're looking at like somewhere between a 25% and 30% degradation in performance, or who knows, maybe it'll actually run at 1600 megahertz, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
Yeah, that's true. That depends on what the 2 gigs of memory is. It might overclock to 1600 megahertz, but you're wrong. You can always take that 1600 megahertz memory and run it at 1333. That will always, I don't want to say always, never use the word always, Brian. That should work without a problem if you wanted to do that.
If past results are indicative, it will run. And I mean, the truth is there's not a huge performance difference between 1333 and 1600. And I'm almost going to venture to say, if you're not a mad benchmarker, you're probably not going to see a huge performance difference between 1066 and 1600.
I think that's accurate. I think memory speed is one of those things that has, I don't know, it's gone past its prime. I don't want to say it's not relevant anymore, but like you said, if you're not one of those benchmarking gurus, you know what? You don't even have to buy. If you've already bought the 1600 megahertz memory, that's fine.
Right.
If you haven't, I personally, in my systems, I just run them at 1333. Can you run memory of different capacities on the same channel? So essentially, it's a two-channel board. He would have a 2 gig, 1 gig paired with a 2 gig and a 1 gig. It should work. You know, in the worst case, is it's crashing and you just take out the other two modules and you go about your day, right? But you know, if you can get 6 gigs of memory in your system instead of 4 gigs, I guess why not give it a shot?
Yeah, especially if you're working with, you know, Photoshop type editing, video editing, big audio files, or you like to keep 275 windows open at once, an extra couple gigabytes of RAM could be a nice thing.
This is true.
Oh, boy. I was wandering around on failblog.org, says Ryan, when I stumbled across this picture, which I figured both of you would appreciate. Apparently, some guy bought a Core i7-975 Extreme processor and had some issues. Check out the attached picture and read the last line of his review. Completely unbelievable. Where did that picture go?
I put a pic link in there if it will work. I uploaded it. If you don't have it, let me know if that link doesn't work. I have it.
I'm just having one of those moments where the Skype has managed to suck up all of the internet, and of course you cannot see the gigantic bright screen in front of my camera. No.
So it's like I think it's that Tiger Direct, I guess, is where this reviewer posted his review, and it's a rating out of 5 stars, and he rated it 1.8 overall, like 1.0 value, 1.0 quality. And the review says this: I bought the CPU as an upgrade for my video editing suite, and after a week of use, my computer just shut off, and I started smelling burnt silicon. I inspected my computer and found that half the socket was molten. I do not recommend the CPU because of its obviously poor design. I already wrote a letter to Intel about this. Guess I should have used a CPU fan? Question mark.
What?
The last line says, guess I should have used a CPU fan, question mark.
I don't even know how to react to that.
And that's why it was on the fail blog. The answer is, yes, you should have used a fan, and no, you should not be building any more computers.
Oh, wow. That's just so wrong on so many levels.
So the moral of this story, ladies and gentlemen of our audience, is always use coolers on your processors.
Yes.
I actually saw an interesting demonstration of a processor that I can't talk about again yet, but I just saw it like literally 10 minutes before the show started, where we were working with a very new processor, low power, low heat. And the guy I was talking to said that the people in the testing lab with it had been having a competition to see who could put a penny on the processor and put the, and hold thumb down on the penny and how long they could act as the heat sink for the CPU. And they said they'd had people go, you know, 40, 50 minutes before they finally got tired and had to take their, you know, their finger or thumb off of the penny. So maybe in the future you'll be able to have that processor run without a cooler, but not an Intel Extreme Edition, anything ever.
No. Exact. Yeah. No, I still remember then they, when they were demonstrating, Intel years and years ago were demonstrating they'd hit this new, for an IDF event, how they'd hit this new performance level. And it may have been 3 gigahertz back when 3 gigahertz was an impossible sounding number for a CPU, but I knew a couple of the engineers that were working on the project, and I was like, so who had the can? And he's like, nobody here lost any fingernails from Freon tonight. Nope, nope, nope. And the other guy sort of puts his hand behind his back. but yes, I'm pretty sure. Well, I guess if he bought an OEM version, it wouldn't have come with a fan and it wouldn't have come with instructions. So if you don't know that you're supposed to have a fan on a CPU, please use one.
Indeed.
And use one that's designed for that CPU. Caleb has a question about Radeon 3800s. He says, I'm currently running two ATI 3870s in Quantifier. How does this setup compare to the newest ATI offerings? So, yeah.
He mentioned that he wanted to know the name of that site for the cables as well.
Quantiprice.com. If you want to try to buy as close to an American cable as you can, Blue Jeans Cable. Blue Jeans Cable actually makes some fantastic cables primarily for home theater and audio. For Monoprice, I think they have everything at Monoprice. Let me see if they have...
They have a lot of stuff at Monoprice, I know.
I was going to say, they have SATA cables, don't they?
That actually I don't know, because I never have a shortage of SATA cables around my office.
So look at that. They've got SATA cables. Would you like a half meter 90 degree, a full meter 90 degree? I love like 1 meter, 18 inch, 36 inch, type L to type L, 6 foot internal shielded cable, because you never know when you need 6 feet to route a cable. 6 feet, 6 feet, 6 feet, blue, silver.
Are you talking about SATA cables?
Black, all SATA cables. The fancy ones
that are colored. 6 foot SATA cable?
6 foot SATA cables, dude.
I don't think the electric will work that far. I'm going to go on a limb here and say I don't think that cable would work. I might have to buy one of those and test it just to see.
I think you need to buy one to test it just to see,
dude.
I'm going to do that.
I'm going to put that on my list.
You can't be dissing the 6 foot SATA cables if they work or not.
All right, let me answer Caleb. He has a pair of ATI 3870 X2s. So those were graphics cards that had two GPUs on one card. It's been a while since we've seen those. None of those came out with the 5000 series, and none of them come out with the NVIDIA GT X400 series either. I get this question a lot, with here on the show and through PC Perspective and that kind of thing, and everybody wants to know what the newest stuff compares with to their really old stuff. And maybe I'm being a little unfair. 3800 is not like really, really old, but you think we've got 38 to 48 to 58. So we're talking 2.5 years, maybe stretching to 3, depending on now that we're this far into the 5000 series. It's been so long since I tested the 38.7 stuff. It's hard to really say for sure. But what I did was I went back through all of my old benchmarks. And the only benchmark that I used when the 3870 was coming out that I still use today is 3DMark Vantage. So I kind of took, okay, what were my GPU scores then? How did that compare to the 4800s? And then how did the 4800s compare to the 5800s? And what I kind of came up with is that if you have four 3870s, which essentially he has, two cards, two GPUs each, then if crossfire scaling has been keeping up with what we have seen today, then four of those is equal to about a 5850 or 5870 that you can buy today. Maybe 5850 is kind of what I'm leaning towards here, just to be on the safe side. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is that the next generation of parts from AMD, when it comes out, will be kind of like this mid-range pricing, and it will match that as well. So it's kind of one of those things. When you buy really expensive computer components, you know this is going to be the case. The 3870 X2s were probably $600 a piece when you bought. And now those $1,200 graphics cards is going to be replaced by a $200 graphics card that will match it. You know, it might actually do better because of, you know, you've got, you know, you've got the X11 features, you've got tessellation support and improvements, you've got all kinds of new features, you know, bit streaming audio, HDMI integration, all those other type of stuff that didn't exist back then. It'll be way more power efficient than the 3870s are going to be. So I think this is going to be a good time for this reader, this listener, to upgrade his components, because he's going to be able to take out those four cards, put in one card, and get much better performance, better power consumption, better features. And he's obviously a hardcore gamer. Anybody that's running four GPUs in their system is a hardcore gamer. So he's gonna like that
stuff. You would hope. Well, should he go with two 5870s and Crossfire?
I would tell this person specifically to wait, because if he's willing to spend $1,200 on graphics cards back then he might be willing to spend more than $100 or $200 on cards today. So I would say to that consumer, wait a few weeks. If you've been okay with that, wait a few weeks and see what comes out the pipeline.
Good to know. David has a good question. He says, for quick background, I want to build an awesome system in a couple of months. My primary motivation is X-Plane. Love that app. But we'll also run other games. StarCraft 2 for sure, possibly Batman. I have kids in the house, so the latest frames per second is noise a priority. My biggest question is Crossfire SLI software support basically free with OpenGL and DirectX. I know that X-Plane is more CPU intensive than GPU, but it will fill up your video card memory with textures if it's there. So I don't know if this software will automatically see two NVIDIA 460s as one big video card with 2 gigabytes of memory to use, or if it has to be written to support the extra gigabyte of video memory. If it isn't automatic, I'll probably budget for a single card as opposed to two. So if you're not familiar with X-Plane, it's basically, I think X-Plane's the reason that Microsoft finally stopped developing their flight simulator. A company called Laminar Research came up with the blade element theory. It's a virtual wind tunnel physics. They use that to develop this incredible flight sim software, which is, if you've never seen it, it's x-plane.com. It's pretty freaking awesome.
It's pretty sweet. I actually, when I had the 6-monitor configuration set up in our office, we played it on that, and it was awesome. It was sweet.
It also basically runs on everything: iOS, WebOS, Linux, Mac, Windows. I don't think it's open source, is it? It is proprietary.
No, I don't think it's open source. I just think it's just almost not community built, but it's just not done by a big dev house. So they're much more open to discussions and talking with people about it.
It's a pretty crazy, it's, you know, design software comes with the program. Blade Theory is really interesting if you want to get your math nerd on, but I'm going to avoid that because I can't remember what the graphics card specs are, because it'll basically, all of the minimal requirements are a 2 gigahertz CPU, a gigabyte of RAM, and a DirectX video card, DirectX 9 video card, 10 gigabytes of hard drive space, 64 megabytes of VRAM. At the very entry level, very little is actually required to run it. Of course, a computer with 4 gigabytes of RAM, a quad-core processor, and 2 gigabytes of VRAM can be used, and X-Plane will take full advantage of it. CPUs with multiple cores are useful. I'm trying to find information on multiple cards, though.
Well, the thing about his question is he wants to use two 460s, two 1 gigabyte 460 cards, GTX 460s, and if his statement is true, he says that the game will use as much graphics memory as possible, regardless of how fast the GPU is. If that's the case, the unfortunate thing about SLI and Crossfire is that the system doesn't see those pair of cards as one GPU. It sees them as two different GPUs, and each GPU can only access their own local memory. So you won't be able – what it will do is that game, what happens with all games with SLI and Crossfire, is that it duplicates the memory in both GPUs, and then one GPU will render frame one, the other GPU does frame two, the first GPU does frame three, the second GPU does frame four, and so they have to have the same memory size, and then they have to they it doesn't combine it to think of it as a 1-2 gigabyte frame buffer. So I think his best bet would to go with one card with more memory. If that's
right,
if that's actually I don't know enough about X-Plane to say if that's actually what it would do, that it sees a big advantage out of more system or not system memory but graphics memory. But if that's the case, one card would be better.
Yeah, it looks like between the Digital Edge PC, which is the site that's recommended for people who want to use PCs, not Macs, to play X-Plane, they all go with single card options. And if you dig down deep inside the X-Plane pages, X-Plane typically does not benefit from SLI or Crossfire. This is because performance boosts using these technologies depend on whether or not the computer is limited by the fill rate. For X-Plane at a resolution of 10x7, the simulator speed is limited by the geometry going across the bus, not the fill rate. So actually it's interesting. So where the computer is not limited by the graphics card's fill rate, SLI can actually slow the simulator down, not speed it up. Now, I don't know how old that observation was, but yeah. There was one other set of... Where did it go? Category. Here we go. Frequently Asked Questions, X-Plane Wiki. Oh, don't you love that moment where you click on something and then everything becomes mud-like?
Disappears.
Questions about hardware. Why does SLI or Crossfire not speed up my simulation? Basically,
there you go.
It seems to be a pure geometry issue.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're saying that, you know, when the card's communicating with each other in SLI or Crossfire, sending textures back and forth, this can be slower than one card doing all the work, because sending these textures from one card to the other can be slower than doing a whole frame. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I think it just makes more sense to go with one card at this point. You know, take the budget you were going to have for two 460s, put it into one card, NVIDIA or AMD at this point. You know, you can get GTX 480s that have 1.5 gigs of memory. You can get Radeon HD 5870s that have 2 gigs of memory, you know, if you're going to pay a little bit more for them. But I think they'll both be about the price of two GTX 460s anyway. So we do have, let's see, there was an email that I think we kind of discussed.
Yeah, Felix and the 7-year upgrade. It's like the 7-year itch, but it's so much sweeter because Felix hasn't upgraded his PC in 7 years. He's saving up for a wedding. His fiance mentioned that she wanted him to do an upgrade for his PC, a sign of true love if I have ever heard it, except for maybe having your future wife tell you that she wants you to upgrade the suspension on your truck. But he's trying to keep it at a low budget because he's saving for the wedding. He figures he's going to get the most value by going with AMD. And it amazes him that he's never had an AMD CPU before. Ryan, Felix is trying to keep it between $230 and $250. Okay.
That's okay. Yeah.
That's tight.
Yes, it is. he says he's currently considering like a Phenom X4 processor. He wants to know if he needs a new heatsink. Yes, the answer is definitely yes. His current system, by the way, is a 7-year-old Dell Dimension Intel Pentium 4 2.4 gigahertz with an ATI Radeon 800 XT. The problem here is I don't think I can get him an upgrade, because with that system you're going to replace the motherboard, the processor, the memory, the heatsink, chances, and the graphics card. I would definitely recommend changing the graphics card. The X or the 800 XT is pretty old. That's almost a whole new system. All we got left is your hard drive, your optical drive, and your case and power supply.
Right.
I'd want to say I don't think he can do this for $250 and not have, you know, if we're talking about like your average kind of budget. Let me go to the PC Perspective site has a thing called the Hardware Leaderboard, where we have new system builds kind of priced out in four different specs. Our current budget system is actually, okay, it's down to $438. That includes a $99 processor, $79 motherboard, an $80 graphics card, $50 worth of memory, $60 hard drive, and $70 power supply. The only thing we leave out is the case. I would think if he's moving from that old of a system, he would have to upgrade pretty much everything across the board. He's not going to be able to reuse anything except maybe the case. And since it's a Dell Dimension, I don't know if you have any experience with with trying to shove new components in those types of cases, I wouldn't personally want to do it.
It depends on which evolution of Dell Dimension is. Some of them are actually pretty easy to upgrade and pretty friendly to that. Some of them are less friendly, but you know, they're the nice thing about them is they're pretty easy to open. They split up. They use most of the ones of the older generation. I'm thinking because like 7 years ago was a long time, but it should be a big gray box that splits open in half with the motherboard buried on one side. And I'm pretty sure it's a standard ATX layout on the motherboard, power supply up on top. And it kind of like runs, the drives are on this half of the case, the motherboard's on that half of the case. I can't imagine it's got more than like a 300 watt power supply.
Yeah, that's an issue. I'm open to ideas.
Because at this point, I'm having trouble, you know, because I'm kind of stuck with you.
I hate to tell him to go buy a new graphics card because it's not really going to do any good. I don't even know if he has AGP or PCI Express. Right. He's got to have AGP if it's 7 years old, I guess. You know, and I'm looking at that hardware leaderboard. The processor, the motherboard, and the graphics card, as low cost as they are, $179 and $80, we're already at $240, $260, which is right at his limit. And he didn't get that. Doesn't include memory, and probably a power supply. And if you really, really wanted to, you could use a hard drive.
What's the fastest processor you could drop into like a socket 478 motherboard? I mean, you think it was a socket 478 or socket 775?
This has got to be a 478. Finding one. I mean, you could go that route. You're not going to be able to find anything new at like a retailer and e-tailer. You're going to have to start looking on eBay. You get looking into used parts, used processors and GPUs and stuff. I'm not a big fan of recommending to people who knows what they've overclocked it to or if it ran.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. But when they went to Core Duo, they went to a new chipset, right?
Correct.
Or are there any Core Duos? Because there's no Core Duos that are going to run on a 478. If he's got a 775?
I don't think he does. So 775 was Core Duo was the start of the Core architecture socket. You can get faster Pentium 4 processors. He's got one 2.4. I mean, they go up to maybe 2.8 or 3. Actually, I think they went up to like 3.4 or something like that. You know, they're going to be hot. They're going to draw a lot more power. That was not a very efficient processor architecture. Right. So again, we go down to what power supply is in the case. I can't recommend an upgrade for this person, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Seven years is a long time, right? I mean, 7 years, to get 7 years of life out of a computer is pretty good. And considering you can build, you know, almost a brand new one for $500.
Yeah, I mean, I've built a lot of $500 PCs. You recycle the operating system, you recycle the case. I really would recommend getting a new power supply at this point. Mm-hmm. Should we spec out a $500 PC for Felix next week?
Let's do that.
I think the goal is noble, but I just think for $250, there's not enough to, you know, because it's like, you know, AMD Phenom 2, great part, but you're talking about $100 for the chip. You know, can you even buy a decent $50 motherboard for the Phenom 2 yet? And it's, you know, and then like $50 for memory, and then it's just, it's tight, man. It's painfully tight.
Yeah.
Just a favor, Felix, if you're listening, email us which chipset you have in that motherboard. We're pretty sure it's the 478. And we got to talk to you, man. If you can squeak us like $500, we can give you a performance increase. It's probably going to leave you weeping with joy. But $250, I mean, Ryan mentioned it. The problem is a lot of the parts you might be able to upgrade in your existing infrastructure are just not available at retail anymore. And unless you want to do a lot of parts hacking, you're going to spend a lot of time and your budget on something that's not going to give you the kind of significant increase you could get otherwise. Gosh, I wish, was it Tom's Hardware who used to do the giant for a while, was doing the giant CPU and GPU charts where they tried to get like every generation of CPU on one chart.
Yeah, I think they still do that. I don't know how frequently they're updated now, but I think they still do that, at least with the graphics cards. I don't know about the CPUs.
But
I mean, whatever we recommend next week will be faster than your Pentium 4 2.4 gigahertz, I promise.
Yeah, I mean, like if you upgrade every 3 or 4 years, you can usually almost double your speed, and not like double your speed. Like, look, it did this much better on a benchmark, but wow, that is so much faster. And a $500 PC right now would probably blow your hair back like a Memorex commercial and make you just restarting the system will take several days less than it currently does right now.
That's true.
And I got to say, Felix, keeping a system going that for that long, you are an awesome, awesome, awesome dude for doing that.
That's very intriguing. Yeah, I mean, imagine what the move from whatever operating system that is to Windows 7 is going to do.
I think we got to end it on that, man. I am so humbled because I've never managed to keep a system like a 5-year-old system going without massive upgrades. So, Felix, you have our support, but we need to get more money for your system upgrade, dude.
Definitely. All right, so I guess we want to. We're just such a downer. We got to tell this guy to scrap his old faithful computer.
He can keep the case. He can keep the case.
What do you think? Maybe.
As long as it's got a standard ATX layout in that one. Well, I'll go look. Cause tell us which Dell dimension you have. We'll check that one.
Send a picture in or something. You know, let us know.
Brian. So
I guess if we're going to, scrap his old computer, we might as well scrap this episode of the show too.
Ryan is currently in LA, but is normally can be found where, sir?
Normally I'm found in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, but online you can find me at PC Perspective. That's PCPER.com. We do hardware reviews, motherboards, processors, graphics cards, notebooks. If you want to know about these new Radeon 6000 series cards, to keep checking PC Perspective in the coming days and weeks, and there will be plenty of information on there for that. Also, at Ryan Shrout on Twitter, and then our communal email address, twitch@twit.tv.
We want to hear your questions, people, so send them in. I am Patrick Norton. You can find me at techzilla.com when I'm not doing Twitch with Brian. And it's a weekly video program I do with Veronica Belmont. We get pretty much hands-on with any and all types of technology, although it usually has something to do with computers or smartphones or tablets or, well, pretty much anything involving computers or the internet is fair game on a weekly basis. Digital cameras are good. Video cameras, video editing. No weasels, though. There have been no weasels on. Oh, we shot hardware this week. Should the episode ever post, we had a terrible PG&E, Pacific Gas Electric was rewiring our building, so they had to take all of the servers offline. And all of them came up except for the two we need to actually render out the show and post the show, the rendering servers. They just now got them up this afternoon. But if you would like to see me getting feeling, the Greek word for it would be catharsis, a transmuting of emotions, a letting out of emotional. I got to shoot a bunch of hardware with our producers, Serafina. Nice. And
like
Roger.
With a gun, you mean, right?
Like with a gun, like with a gun. Mini 14, several 9mm handguns, AR-15. Yeah, we went out to a secret location, a safe, responsible location, with a couple of ammo cans and everybody's favorite weapons, and we shot the snot out of a bunch of hardware that had failed us. This is all hardware that had failed and was not recoverable, and then was properly recycled once our catharsis of once we just got done shooting the hell out of it.
the best I can say I've done is I've thermited some old dead hardware before. That was kind of fun.
That would just also
melt right through it.
It's just such a beautiful sight. I've always wanted to have like one of those big cauldrons that they use for melting steel. There's actually a place that does metal casting. They teach metal casting and foundry arts and stuff and machining and welding. It's where I learned how to weld, actually, over in Oakland. And I've always wanted to get a bunch of hardware that had failed everybody and like cast it into a doorstop or something. Got to talk to those guys about that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Twitch This Week Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Trout.
We will see you next week.